Hello, guys.
Hey, everyone.
Hello, guys.
This is Omero's podcast, and this is the English version.
And the second version as people as well. So
we are new here.
I'm Lavinia.
I'm Raquel.
And I'm Rafaela.
And today we will continue to talk about different authors that had blindness in their life. So let's go.
And to start, did you guys know that the term Homerus means hostage? This word was normally used to refer to blind in Greek, and as in many are associating this name with the classical author. Famous for epic poems such as the Iliad and the Odyssey. It's worth saying that his name has already emerged, probably because he was visually impaired.
To get where we are as a society, we went through many processes that defined values and principles that permeate the present day. And yet, we are not completely tolerant beings amid the difference that surrounds us. If today we observe various aspects around us that need improvement, especially when we talk about the integration of people with disabilities into society, it is very easy to forget that the achievements already established are very recent facts in human history, and that the PCDs had to live with and suffer from injustice and cruelty for most of our past.
Also, in Western antiquity, for example, the issue of support or acceptance was much more complicated than what we experience today. Some studies report that individuals with any type of disability were not even considered people, since the value of each subject was defined according to their usefulness, such as the ability to be a merchant, a soldier, or a politician. Just to get an idea of the rejection employed, here's a quote from Aristotle taken from his work of the Politics, book 7, chapter 14. As to rejecting or rearing newborns, there must be a law according to which no mishapen child will be created. A strong speech, but which was already in line with what the philosopher's own master Plato also said, and to demonstrate this, we have here a quote taken from the Republic. Then they will take the sons of superior men and take them. They will go to the sheepfold with nurses who live apart in a part of the city. Those of inferior men and any of the others who are deformed will hide them in a forbidden and hidden place as is proper. Anyone who watched the movie 300, released in 2006, will probably remember a scene in which newborn Spartan babies who did not appear to be healthy were thrown off a cliff, as in theory they would be a burden to society. So basically, in other words, for people with disabilities there was only exile and removal or death.
And it's also very important to mention, even for being one of the motivating forces for the creation of this podcast, that despite the ancient society doubting the ability of these people, many of them exceeded expectations and managed to develop and perform various functions, such as, for example, in literature. And we are talking about authors who were not only important for this artistic branch, since it is possible to say that their work shaped a large part of the culture of the West, as in the unquestionable case of Homer.
So guys, going back to the Greek poet, maybe you are wondering how he managed to write his works while being visually impaired in that society and period extremely complicated for people in those conditions. Unfortunately, there is no definitive answer to this. But what we do know is that his works were sung to the public as was common to the tradition of the time. In this way, specific people from his audience would possibly take notes and reproduce this verbally, which would give rise to the texts not being 100% faithful to what was initially manufactured by the author. There are even studies that show that some songs of the Iliad and Odyssey are very different from each other in terms of style, which would reinforce some theories that the texts were already by third parties or that Homer was not even existed.
And even because there were already pre-existing traditions to him, such as the myths of the Trojan Wars and all of the legends of the Greek mythology, which were narratives transmitted orally and that Homer probably listened to his whole life, and then only in quotation marks, organized in the way we know. But we will not go into that subject because it is not the focus here. The important thing is to bring this information that few people know, that back in the 8th century before Christ, there was already an author overcoming the adversities fostered by society to produce a set of works that influenced and helped to consolidate the same community, reverberating to this day in the literary field.
Take a giant time jump here, which maybe gives the impression that after Omer there was a shortage of important authors with some visual impairment for more than a millennium. But this is not the case. It is just a matter of priorities. To suit the podcast time, which is short, so let's go to the 16th century, because we need to talk about an author well known, or he should be well known, by all of us speakers of the Portuguese language. After all, Camões was also visually impaired, and that didn't stop him from writing Os Lusíadas.
I think everyone knows, maybe they don't know the books, but they already heard this name somewhere. Mm-hmm. So, well, it's just the case of Camões, who was born in Lisbon in 1524. According to some theories, right, because this is, in fact, that is not a consensus, in short, his situation is a little different. This is because the author lost one of his eyes in a battle while still serving the Portuguese army in Africa. And this is anonymous information among historians. Many paintings that portray him do not omit this detail, and it is possible to notice one of the orbits without the eye.
And in case you're wondering, yes, Os Lusíadas was written after that incident, and for better or worse, depending on your point of view, missing an eye didn't stop him from continuing to serve the Portuguese crown in battles in the eastern colonies. And when he was not fighting in an official way, as we can say, he was causing trouble in the streets, because there are numerous reports of fights in which the author was involved, which led him to being arrested several times.
Oh god.
Yeah, and in terms of historical context, there is no doubt that Camões was a very hot-tempered person.
Yes, as Rafa said, you can see that Camões was a troublemaker. So his most famous work didn't get the recognition it deserved while the author was still alive, something that only became a reality many years later.
And the fact is that having monocular vision didn't stop him from doing anything he liked. Falling in love, having his heart broken by several disappointments in love. Aww. Everyone, you know,
I
happens. Fighting, and above all, writing. And without the enthusiasm and determination, we would not have one of the most important epics in the history of literature.
Right now, we are going to advance a little more than 100 years, because we are going to talk about an English author who managed to influence even some Christian notions.
Wow.
And images that last until today, and that are not in the Bible, but in his most famous work.
Mm-hmm. So we are talking about John Milton. He was responsible for the creation of one of the greatest classics of literature, the epic poem O Paraíso Perdido, The Lost Paradise, which was written in 1667. This work, which is considered his masterpiece, was produced while the author already was blind due to serious problems in vision, which began in his youth and culminated in his total blindness in the year 1649, which was the year Milton wrote one of his works as a visually impaired person.
Milton is said to have had a condition called nuclear sclerotic cataract, which caused him to acquire a certain type of double vision, which are the first signs of the referred disease. In one of his works, the so-called The Second Defense of the British People, Milton gave details of how this blindness started and inferred that the long periods of studying at night contributed to his vision, which was already weak due to hereditary reasons becoming impaired, even more weakened.
And talking about his condition is a differential concerning the other two authors that we have already mentioned here, because in this way we can not only understand the nature of his disability, but also observe the poet's feelings about it. For example, he attributed to himself a position of uncomfortable hypocrisy, as his eyes did not change for those who watched him, but his vision, on the contrary, was not full.
That's very deep.
Right.
Yeah. So this is related to some themes of O Paraíso Perdido, since the work mentions, among other things, about guiltiness and the consequence that this can bring to the individual, as they act as a catalyst for marks and stigmas to greater both in spirit and in the body. And this guilt, which is usually derived from disobedience to God's plan, is capable of affecting not only us, mere mortals, but also divine beings, as is the case of Lucifer, the primordial rebel who is the protagonist of the poem.
Is it possible to say then that Milton probably felt he was to blame for his own visually impaired condition? Is it possible?
In a question like that, the answer will always be inconclusive, but there are real indications about this, even because Milton, in his non-fictional writings, employs a slight confessional tone, like the one already mentioned, about his long night studying, in which the author tries to demonstrate that he is himself to blame for his condition on account of his actions and factors inherited from his ancestors. And it is impossible not to make the association with the doctrine of original sin, which tries to explain the origin of evil and suffering through the fall of man, or rather, because of disobedience to God.
So, even in the 17th century, the belief that a possible disability is stemmed from some act of the person himself or his parents was strong, right?
Yeah, and until long after that, scientific understanding, which decouples the spiritual question from human conditions, as idealized in the 16th century, and then evolves in later periods, giving rise to naturalism, scientism, positivism, etc., strong both by the state and by the people in general. So it is only from the 20th century that society begins to feel and accept, in fact, this new way of seeing the world. And then the flowering of conquests and reparations for individuals begins, unfairly stigmatized as in the case with PCDs.
But going back to John Milton, was this aspect of guilt the only one he related to his visually impaired condition? How could that not stop him from producing so much in terms of literature?
I think it's important to differentiate here this notion of guilt that Milton felt from the guilt and shame we felt when we do something wrong. The doctrine of original sin dictates that this is something that every human being inevitably carried. So ironically, using rational thinking, depriving oneself of human activities deemed worthy made no sense, as reparation would only come after death and God's compassion in your judgment. Ideally, sacrifices made to bring about an improvement were always welcome, and Milton firmly believed that his works, which contained several Christian ideas that he would like to propagate, would be an acceptable justification for a weakness in his vision, since the imperfection of the body would be a cheap price for the restoration of the spirit.
It is not a very appropriate thought to encourage nowadays, after so many achievements, and the need to eliminate some stigmas once and for all.
No, but is it pertinent to demonstrate that people seek ways of overcoming in the most different ways? Currently, it is not necessary to do a self-penance to produce as Milton did, nor to dedicate these works to something intangible. But if there is a spark that facilitates this movement, whether for artistic purposes or not, it is worth looking for it.
Yeah, I agree, because mainly we now have several technologies that make life easier for everyone, and that includes the lives of the visually impaired. They might be listening to this podcast right now and then playing an audiobook by some of these authors, for example, something that would have been impossible a few decades ago.
Yes, audio dramas began to emerge soon after the popularization of radio. That is, it is something that can even be considered old, but this instantly of being able to play an infinity of works available is something that only the internet made possible.
Oops, but it is important to point out that this goes beyond the consumerist vision, because even in the aspect of individual expression, there are facilities. It is possible to dictate text to the computer or cell phone, for example, and the transcription takes place automatically in an almost perfect and easily correctable way. That is, there are many resources for a visually impaired person to be able to write a poem or other literary work writing and publishing, by the way.
And that's one of our goals here, right, Raquel and Lavinia?
Definitely. Yeah.
We don't just want to point out authors who overcame countless adversities in more difficult times, but to publicize and encourage this democratization of literary and artistic productions. The examples of Homer, Camões, and Milton are cool, but it would be even better to seek new production of new incredible stories.
Correct. And so we end here the first part of our podcast, and the Ramirez continues the chronological line of important authors that are related to the visually impaired culture.
We see you guys in the next episode.
Yeah, bye-bye.
See you. Bye-bye. Bye-bye.